Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9-3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
This is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another edition of the D-Word podcast here on UK Health Radio. Over the past 5 years I've been doing the D-Word, I've become aware of so many organisations doing great work in the dementia field. One thing, though, that has also come across is the need for everyone to know what everyone else is doing. With the launch of Dementia Network Plus, hopefully that picture will become a lot clearer. And my guest on this edition is Dr. Georgina Charlesworth from the University College London, who's involved at the forefront of the new initiative. Well, Georgina, it's a pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D-Word. Going to be talking about Dementia Network Plus, but before we get into all of that, I wonder if you could just give us a quick introduction and tell us about, you know, the work that you do at UCL.
Hey, I'm a psychologist. I've been at UCL for sort of 20 years or so, but also been working in the NHS during that time as well, in services for people in later life, as well as people with dementia of all ages. And so the work at UCL has included psychological support for family carers of people with dementia, and more recently supporting people with dementia after they've recently received their diagnosis and are perhaps working out whether or not to talk to other people about that, whether to disclose the fact that they've been given the dementia diagnosis. And I'm part of a unit that looks at stigma and different stigmatized conditions and the ways in which people with dementia either really feel that stigma or find a way to resist that stigma.
So plenty of interesting stuff for us to talk about there. But we are going to talk about Dementia Network Plus, which is launching this month. I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, the whole idea behind it. Where did it come from, and what was the idea about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's four Dementia Network Pluses that are funded by the Economic and Social Research Council, the National Institute for Health Research, and the Alzheimer's Society. And each of those network pluses has a different characteristic. So the one that we're focusing on is on risk reduction or prevention of dementia.
And that, you know, that's a really interesting area. Last year's World Alzheimer's Report was all about prevention. And, Wendy Viner from Alzheimer's Disease International talking to us about it. And one thing that really came out of that for me is that you've now got a 40% risk reduction chance in terms of getting dementia, looking at all those things that, you know, we can do better. Let's put it that way. And if that was another condition, there'd be someone out there shouting it from the rooftops. But I don't really hear that in terms of dementia.
Well, no, I think that's a fair point that people often feel that dementia is a topic that people try to avoid talking about rather than looking to talk about. But I think that's one of the whole purposes of your radio program, isn't it? I think to try to help people feel more comfortable about talking about dementia. And I mentioned just a few moments ago that one of the things that we work with is this idea of the stigma of dementia. That's another topic that the World Alzheimer's Report has focused on. And in fact, their report this year is again to do with attitudes towards dementia. But it might well be that that stigma of dementia is one of the things that sort of stops people talking about it. It's certainly one of the things that people claim gets in the way of there being as much research funding as there is for some other sort of health conditions and topics. But it's quite a tricky topic to talk about, this whole business of prevention of dementia, because like you say, there's been some calculations to say that, well, 40% of 40% of dementias are potentially preventable. But that's a little bit of statistical maneuvering. You know, that's kind of like a best guess. And we don't as yet really know that there's many interventions that we can really solidly prove do reduce the risk or prevent dementia. We just know that we know increasingly large amounts about what's associated with dementia, what sorts of things tend to appear in the same person. And so when we look at whole populations, you know, big data for populations in different studies around the world, we find that there's certain things that are associated with dementia and seem to raise the risk of dementia. But just because there's that association, that doesn't necessarily mean that if we reduce whatever that thing might be, whether that thing is depression or diabetes or any of the other sort of list of factors, we don't know whether that would actually completely prevent dementia. So on the one hand, it's such an important field to be thinking of what might we do to reduce dementia risk. But on the other hand, we're still not there in terms of knowing for sure what does or doesn't actually prevent dementia. And the bottom line is some really basic things that general good health and doing things that are good for our heart is also good for our brain. Keeping cognitively, socially, physically active are good for both our heart and for our brain. So, on the one hand, it's a very basic message. And on the other hand, there's all kinds of complexities to do with the studies that means that we are going to need to really spend quite a lot of research years in working out whether these associations that give us the idea that certain things are associated with dementia risk, whether those associations are actually causal factors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Always good to hear from you here on the podcast, and especially if you'd like to be my guest in 2025. You can find us on social media, Radio TDW, or do drop an email to tdwradio@gmail.com. My guest this week is Dr. Georgina Charlesworth, and we're talking about Dementia Network Plus.
So is it, you know, is that where Dementia Network Plus kind of starts to hone in on to those areas, and also involving, as I see, you know, a whole range of people? You've got academics, professionals, people with lived experience who, you know, can all pull into the knowledge base.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we're really hoping to do is to kind of improve the communication between those different stakeholders and try to make sure that there's learning in both directions, so that the professionals can hear more from people with lived experience, and the people with lived experience feel that they can sort of meaningfully sort of contribute in terms of developing sort of new ideas and taking the research in different directions. But the other aspect of the Network Plus is also to try to make sure that we're considering all communities, and particularly underserved communities, because when I was talking about those big studies that look at data from across whole populations, those populations tend to be quite narrow. It's not everybody that gets involved in research, and so the scientists can only do the data analysis on the data that they've got. And if the data that they've got is all from the same kind of person, you know, people that have a bit of spare time to take part in research, and people that are very comfortable with reading and writing and filling in questionnaires, it means that we miss out on the people who perhaps, if we're doing the research in this country, perhaps people who don't feel that their English is strong enough to take part in the research, or who are perhaps wary about getting involved with sort of universities or researchers. So the other part of our remit is to try to make sure that we reduce the amount of bias that there is in some of the databases that we're looking at, and we look at people from a broad range of ethnic backgrounds and from a broad range of socioeconomic backgrounds, for example.
That's an interesting task, isn't it? I mean, gives a little insight. I mean, how do you go about achieving some of that?
Fortunately, we're not needing to completely sort of begin from the beginning, and the Alzheimer's Society and other organisations, and the one of the people that I was talking about earlier, the National Institute for Health Research, they've been trying to make sure that all researchers are aware of the importance of carrying out their research in populations that reflect the kind of the whole demographic of the UK, rather than a narrow part of that demographic. So, like I said, fortunately, we're not beginning from the beginning, but there's still lots more that we need to do in terms of reaching out to sort of local organisations that reflect some of those communities that up until now might not really have been that involved in research.
Yeah, you know, the network, it kind of interests me from the fact of doing the show, we talk to so many organisations, and it appears that sometimes, through nobody's fault, there isn't anything that's dragging them all together, whereas it seems that, you know, Network Plus may be aimed in that direction.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the reasons why the funders have gone for this kind of Network Plus idea. And like I say, these four networks are all picking up on different aspects of dementia research. So we're doing dementia prevention. There's another of the groups that's looking at inequalities. Another group's working particularly with, or another network, I should say, is working particularly with people who are of working age at the time they're diagnosed with dementia. And then the fourth network is focusing on times when people with dementia are needing some extra sort of care and support, or when people are in later stages of dementia and maybe thinking of end of life and palliative care. So we're all covering different aspects of the sort of dementia field, and the network's really important. We are really being encouraged to try to bring together not just different stakeholders, but find a way for different research groups to actually connect with each other. Because, as you say, there's lots of little pockets of work, but people that don't necessarily know about each other. So we're hoping to really see what we can do to reduce some of those gaps and find ways to expand the amount of sort of collaboration in activities.
Yeah, and I guess, we're all by economics, unfortunately. You've obviously got a fund to do this. Have you got the ability to pass that fund down to some of the smaller organisations as well?
Yeah, absolutely, we do. And this is one of the things that's quite novel about these network pluses, that rather than the money but just being given to one group for a particular program predefined by that group, the nature of the networks is that we part of the money that we've been given is called a flexible fund, with the idea that we distribute that to sort of different groups who are interested in producing research relevant to the theme of our network. So we've got actually three activities that we're in a position to fund. And so one of those is quite typical of research funding, and that people might will be expected to write a sort of scientific bid and say, this is what we'd like to do. And then we will sort of choose which of the applications gets that money. And then we've got there's two other things. One of those is a sort of bringing together perhaps a day when either online or in real life, we will be sort of bringing together some of the different stakeholders to see what kinds of new ideas or activities might come up. And then provide some funds for some of those hopefully new groupings to take some ideas forward. And then the third way in which we're looking to distribute funds is through a sort of micro challenge. And so that's really quite small amounts of funding that we're hoping to make qu quite easily available to, for example, relatively sort of new or junior researchers working together with some voluntary sector or community organisations. So if, for example, they just need some money to provide some refreshments for a focus group, or to be able to afford to, print and send out a set of questionnaires to, or get some translation, for example, so that some materials are more accessible to a group who perhaps otherwise might not take part in research, that we can also sort of have those smaller funds being distributed as well.
Yeah, it sounds. Is this a unique approach? Are other people looking at it this way, or?
Well, it seems, I think this idea of the network pluses seems to be, I don't know, I've only been aware of them relatively recently, but a number of the funding organisations from the UK Research are taking this approach now. So to what extent it's a bit of an experiment, I don't know. We'd need to ask the funders, but we're not the first network plus. There's definitely been network pluses in other topic areas, but I'm also aware that there's further calls that are coming out from some of the different funders who are taking this same approach. So we'll find out as time goes by whether it's a more successful way of bringing about collaboration, communication, producing sort of new ideas from people who perhaps haven't had been able to get their ideas funded before. We'll be needing to write our own reports of what we do as we go along. And I imagine that the funders will also be keeping an eye on all of the networks to see whether it seems value for money from their point of view as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great approach because a lot of the people that I talk to, people living with dementia, people in small organisations, sometimes feel a bit isolated, and then they go and actually feed into the big picture. But this really seems to give them the ability to do that.
Well, yes, we certainly hope so. There's always challenges of trying to distribute money because we clearly need to have some sort of governance. We can't just let money sort of disappear. We need to have a way of keeping an eye on it. But on the other hand, we don't want that to become so burdensome that people think, oh dear, how many forms do I have to fill in just to get this really quite small amount of money? So for the little amounts that we're distributing, we're certainly hoping to make it as easy as possible for people to engage in this in research activity. And we also hope to get some really quite good collaborations going, like I say, between sort of the junior researchers, for example, PhD students and people who are perhaps early sort of postdocs, and the various voluntary sector and community organisations who might well have come up with some really quite amazing activities, but not necessarily collected any kind of evaluation data. And often organisations need to do their own evaluations in order to then get their own funding from local authorities or whoever it is that they might be seeking funding from.
Yeah, it is a real, it's a two-way street approach, isn't it, really? That you've got researchers learning from the community, community learning from researchers, and out of that can only come something positive.
Well, so, yeah, certainly hope so. So that idea of knowledge exchange that's been sort of built into the network, and we're very hopeful that that'll be just like you say, an opportunity for that two-way learning, the two-way street.
Yeah, and I guess, when you're looking at people living with dementia, I guess one of the problems we got at the moment is getting enough early diagnosis so you can then start to help people. And obviously we've had, news of drug treatments, etc., big advances, but it all really comes down to getting someone diagnosed in the first place.
Yes and no. So on the one hand, absolutely, there's a lot of things that really totally require the diagnosis in the first place. So for some of these new discoveries that you're talking about, and some of the drugs that are now being licensed, and for some of the tests that hopefully will be available more generally sort of soon, some of the treatments are very specific. They're for particular kinds of dementia. At the moment, generally Alzheimer's disease, which so dementia is one of those, as you'll know, it's one of those umbrella terms that covers lots and lots of different kinds of sort of underlying conditions that show themselves as dementia, but what's going on biologically sort of varies from one to another. So Alzheimer's disease is a particular kind of dementia where people have focused their attention for getting different treatments. And so if you're going to be getting a very specific treatment, clearly you know need to know a very specific diagnosis. So that's one time when diagnosis is absolutely vital. There's also, it might well be that within somebody's locality, there's certain services that they can only access if somebody's got a diagnosis of dementia. So again, then diagnosis is really important if they're wanting to get those dementia-specific sort of services. But the reason why I say sort of no as well is because in actual fact, there's some things that whether or not somebody's got a diagnosis, we would hope would be available to somebody and relevant to people. So, for example, if you were wanting to join a, I don't know, Walking for Health group, that we would hope would be of use and benefit to somebody whether or not they've got a diagnosis. Or if you were wanting to join a community choir, because we know that music and singing is one of those things that can be both useful and bring joy to people. It shouldn't matter whether or not you've got a diagnosis. You could go if you just had worries about your memory or if you had the diagnosis. So there's times when we absolutely need to make sure that the diagnostic provision is there, and there's times when we maybe are overemphasizing the need for diagnosis, because there's going to be some people for whom the diagnosis doesn't make there's some people for whom the diagnosis is absolutely everything. And there's other people where, for example, if they already have a number of, say, physical disabilities or reasons why they're already in need of care and support, and if the nature of their dementia is that they're still very much the person that they used to be in many ways, you know, the diagnosis might be not as important as making sure that they get the good physical care or the good social care. So that doesn't mean that in any way I'm suggesting that we should be reducing the availability of diagnostic services. Not at all. We absolutely need to make sure that they're there. But we, I don't, one of my concerns is that over the years, there's been a tendency to, given that we are a health service where there's, we don't have an endless pot of money, if all the money goes into diagnostic services, what can happen is that some of the post-diagnostic support then doesn't get the funding that it needs, and people don't get the support that they need. So I'm just wary about all the money going into diagnosis.
The station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, we're now approaching 50 new shows every week, available to listen again and download from the website www.ukhealthradio.com. This week, I'm talking about Dementia Network Plus with my guest, Dr. Georgina Charlesworth from University College London.
You took the stigma word to come up a couple of times during our conversation. I think at the beginning you said to me something really interesting, which was actually talking to people about when to tell people, whether to tell people, or how to kind of approach the whole thing, which is something with anybody with a condition, I guess, has to go through that. Well, am I going to be totally open about it? Am I going to be totally closed about it? How am I going to do it? And it's a really difficult world.
It is. Yeah, no, that's right, it isn't. We've carried out a number of sort of studies over the recent years. And what we've discovered is that there's just an enormous range in, as you'd expect, there's lot. Each individual has their own way of how they go about it and also deciding how to go about it. So some people very much take the attitude, listen, dementia is nothing to be ashamed of. If I'd got a broken leg, I wouldn't mind telling people. That's how I'm just going to tell them and get on with it. Whereas for other people, the if people are feeling just overwhelmed by the implications of the diagnosis for themselves and for their identity, if people are just horrified at how others might respond, then they might be incredibly wary of saying anything at all. And so we find that there's some people who absolutely withdraw after the diagnosis, which is then quite contrary to the sorts of things that we know help people to stay well with dementia. So for people staying well with dementia, we want people to continue to be physically and socially and cognitively active. But if the being told the diagnosis then basically sends somebody completely into their shell, to be hiding within their own four walls, then what we've done is just put them in the worst possible position for maintaining their sort of health and well-being. So supporting people to adjust to the diagnosis themselves, basically to kind of get their heads around what that diagnosis means to them, and supporting people to, for those who are concerned about how to go about sort of, sharing the news that they've received, providing people with some support. So just an opportunity to think through and talk through, well, who are the people that need to know? Who are the sorts of people that you would think you might start to tell? Because in the same way as in this country, lots of people find that their colleagues or neighbours don't know quite what to say after a death or after a bereavement. People find that there can be a similar sort of reaction that nobody quite knows what to say if you say to them, "Well, I've recently had a dementia diagnosis." Because sometimes people will say, "Oh, no, you don't have dementia." We all start to forget things as we get over older, and I think people are trying to be kind, but the person with the diagnosis might well feel as if the challenges that they're facing are being minimized, so in some way. And sometimes the person that hears the news might be just so uncertain about what to say that they then sort of absent themselves from that social circle. So we have had people with dementia saying that they've lost friends after they've told people a diagnosis. And in that case, they may well really, really appreciate the opportunity to form sort of new networks of people who are comfortable with talking about dementia and willing to sort of spend time with people with dementia.
I guess also society's perception of dementia comes into it in terms of, how it is perceived, society, the media, etc. I mean, in your experience, has that changed over the past 10 years, say?
I think that all the efforts that they've been to raise dementia awareness have done a good job of raising dementia awareness. I'm not entirely convinced that they've done a good job in reducing dementia stigma or raising dementia friendliness, because many aspects of dementia are realistically scary. Who out of us would want to be in a position where we had lost ourselves and weren't sure where we were or couldn't remember the name of somebody that we knew was really quite near or dear to us? So many aspects of dementia are realistically terrifying. So we shouldn't be surprised if people find that scary. And depending on how we introduce dementia or talk about dementia, we might well find that we've inadvertently sort of terrified people. But in raising awareness, we might have scared people rather than help people to feel that they could find a way to handle the situation, manage the situation, cope with the situation if they were to find themselves either receiving a diagnosis of dementia themselves or supporting somebody else who had dementia. So the in terms of the sorts of things that we need to sort of get better at in the dementia field is finding a way to constantly sort of find the balance between the literature that shows that we can support people with dementia to thrive while not alienating the people who are just in the midst of experiencing the awfulness of losing themselves or the person that they love.
Yeah, and I think that, that is the absolute key, as you say, and very difficult to achieve. Time's bringing us to a close. Just like to say, very good luck with the network. It seems like a really good initiative. And hopefully you can come back on in maybe 6 months' time and we can talk about how it's all going.
Well, but yeah, that would be lovely. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Georgina, for being my guest here on the D Word.
Thank you.
Thanks to Georgina for introducing us to Dementia Network Plus, and you can find out more at www.alzheimers.org.uk and just pop Dementia Network Plus into the search box. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.